seated. Well, I suppose there's three ways a congregation might feel on the last day that a minister is with them. They might think, oh, right, okay, and hardly notice when the minister goes. They might say, oh, my goodness, for that, she's finally going. Or they might be sad. And, of course, for the minister, it's much harder if the people they're leaving feel sad, and I feel terribly sad too. But I'm really not going to cry because, A, it just ruins the makeup. Sorry, it's not my makeup, it's Sam's, his mascara runs and everything. But I have developed a few little professional tricks that I'm willing to share with you since I'm leaving. And these have been developed over funerals when you have to bury children. You can imagine it's the worst thing in the world. And you can't cry because it just makes things worse for other people. And my friend Eve recommends stretching your throat. And so she's done lots of really sad funerals with her head stuck up like a giraffe. Because she said if you elongate your throat, you can't cry. But my patented device is nails dug into the wrist, and I think it must be an acupuncture pressure point or something, because you literally don't seem to be able to cry when you've got your nails digging into your wrist just near the vein. You don't want to do that with very sharp nails, obviously, because you bleed all over the congregation as you shook hands. Well, how can you possibly say goodbye to people that you've loved for 6 years? It's ridiculous. I'm not going to try and do it in any kind of melancholy sense, because I think it would be awful and I'd end up weeping. But we've had some great times, 6 years, lots of changes, lots of interesting things have happened. What fabulous colleagues I've had, fabulous people to work with. Cannot praise Sam and Charlie highly enough, as I know anyone can, and wonderful leadership teams. But I suppose the things I will remember will be the conversations that I've had with people, because you get obviously very close to people. I first met Barbara after the passing of Cyril, and it's an instant intimacy with people, and people will share their lives with you. And I've had some fantastic conversations which have taught me so much. I know that you actually pay me to teach you, but actually you have taught me so much more than I have to give you, and it's been really amazing. And I suppose the area I particularly want to highlight this morning is about how we hear God, how we hear God speaking to us. Now, I've not preached on it before, and I've not heard many sermons, because it's actually quite an odd thing to try and put into words, isn't it? How we feel and hear God speaking to us. Now, the fact that we're all Christians means that we all have this experience. I started hearing God properly when I was about 8 and heard him and spoke to him all the time as part of my life. And I remember when I got to university being astonished on having conversations with people who didn't. I thought everybody spoke to God. And I remember explaining to a very sceptical friend, and he said, so let me get this right. You speak to somebody on a regular basis that you've never seen, that cannot be heard by anybody else. He tells you what to do, and you do it. And I said, that's about it, actually, yeah. And he said, fine. Didn't see much of him after that, but anyway. But there we are. That's what we do. We speak to God and we hear his voice. And in the bit of the Bible that I thought was the reading for this morning, which the reading from Elijah, we get to a really low point in poor Elijah's life. He's had an epic life. I've tried to sum it up for you in the Bible notes because it would detain you too long. But he was the prophet that boldly confronted, bagged King Ahab, and said, if you don't stop all this Baal worship, your people will starve and your kingdom will come to ruin. And so he had to rush away. He was the person that confronted the vile, evil queen Jezebel, and she was a pagan and was out to set about destroying everything that God stood for. I like to imagine Russell Crowe playing Elijah. I think I think he'd be really good. He'd be very manly, wouldn't he? And there's this fantastic scene in the Bible which just is crying out for Russell Crowe to preside over a funeral pyre, a great sort of sacrificial bonfire. And the priests of Baal have all got their bonfires and they've got the dead cows on them. And he challenges the priests of Baal to light those pyres. And their wood is tinder dry, but their God, of course, does not exist and cannot do it. And Elijah or Russell Crowe. I haven't decided whether he'd be wearing that kilt from Gladiator or not. But he'd be standing there, he'd say, "Bring on the water." And they threw the water on the bonfire. And then he called upon God and God lit the bonfire. And it was a great miracle. And it was a kind of great blow to the priests of Baal. And they were all massacred by the people standing about them. And this really annoyed Queen Jezebel. And so once again, Elijah had to flee. And there are many wonderful stories in the story of Elijah, how God ministered to him through ravens, bringing him food in the desert. On another occasion, an angel came to him and sustained him. But right at the moment, we meet him in that reading from 1 Kings 19 today. He's completely had it. He's been in the desert. He's starving. He's tired. All his fellow priests of the one true God have been massacred by Jezebel and her horrible minions, and he is so defeated. And he's just, let's face it, he's just a little bit whiny. And every time God listens to him, he repeats, "I've done everything for you, and now look what's happened, and I'm really fed up." And God carries on listening to him, which is wonderful. But I love this bit. I mean, it's a fantastic story, and I do urge you, if you have a bit of time in your diary, to read the story of Elijah as though it was an epic, because it tells us a lot about God. But nothing to me speaks more highly about the nature of God's care for us than this still small voice, as the traditional version of the Bible, the still small voice of calm. It comes out as a whisper in the version that we have, but it's not as, I don't think it's as moving. Now, Elijah had heard God a lot, as I've said. He'd heard him all the time. God had directed his movements, and he'd been a very, very faithful priest from God. So he'd heard God in his head, but this was more like a physical sound. And it had an impact on him that changed his life so profoundly that he would never be as weakened again. It sustained him through the hard times that were to come. A bit of self-revelation here. I had always spoken to God in my head, but on two occasions in my life, I actually heard a voice. The first occasion, when I was about 20, and I'd gone home to stay with my family, and was just trying to get off to sleep, and a voice in the room said, "You better get up and go in the kitchen." And I was in that kind of half-waking, half-sleeping state, and sort of thought, right, you're hearing things. And the voice said, "No, you had better get up and go in the kitchen." And I thought, right, okay, hearing things. So I got up and went into the kitchen, and my gran had left the gas on. And by morning, not only me, but the whole of the rest of the house would have gone up into flames. As soon as something clicked, the house would have gone up. So I think that God spoke to us, or spoke to me, physically, to save us from going up in flames. Now, I'm not going to say why should we be lucky and other people not, because I know that that's a whole theological thing you can't get into. But then years and years later, I had a very similar experience, which was to do with drinking tea and listening to the Today programme on the radio. And I was sitting there drinking my tea, brought to me my beloved, and the radio was carrying a discussion about this newfangled idea of women priests. So it would be about 91, 92. And as I sat there drinking my tea thinking, gosh, a voice said to me, "You could do that." And I said to the voice, "I don't want to do that." And the voice said, "No, you could do that." And I said to the voice, "Well, if you're serious, you better make the next move." And within two or three days, the local vicar had rung and said that he had been thinking about me and wondered if I ought to be a lay reader. And I said, well, you're not going to believe this, Chris, but I think God is calling me to ordination. Now, you could not imagine a less likely candidate for ordination. There are those who might still say that you can't think of a less likely, but it has been one of the great blessings of my life. So I heard God speak like a voice in the room. Now, whether anyone else would have heard it, I don't know. But God became real to me in that moment in a way that I've not previously experienced. And because of that memory, that sustaining memory of hearing a real voice and hearing God speak to me, has sustained me through the times of doubt. And all that, yeah, I don't know if you know, but you go through a very long screening process before you can get selected for ordination. And after that, you go through 3 years training. And there were times when I thought, well, I must be bonkers. Why on earth would anyone want to do that? But it's a thing that sustains our faith, is hearing God. Now, many of us will hear God in a variety of ways, not just as a physical voice or not just as a voice in our heads. Some of you will hear God through the sounds of other people speaking to you. And I've heard God many times in the conversations I've had with members of this congregation. Sometimes you hear it when you hear a preacher, you hear God speaking. Sometimes when I'm reading a hymn or singing a hymn, and it's like a piece of material detaches itself from all the rest and just sings in your head. Do you know what I mean? It sort of just really strikes you to the very heart, and you say, yes, that is what God is saying to me at this time. It sort of sparkles, it resonates, it echoes. I find as I get older, spiritual listening is really hard, and I suppose that's because life becomes cluttered with responsibility and duty. And listening is a very hard discipline, and I've spoken about this before. And so we will need to find strategies for making space to listen properly. And I don't think I mean praying, because praying involves in us doing something. We're making noises, we're saying things. I think what I mean is entering a kind of passive state, a kind of openness. And it's very hard to find, isn't it? Some of you will find it walking up mountains. Some of you will find it in the swimming pool. But you certainly don't find it when you're making a lot of noise, and it's very important. I've got a sneaky confession, which is now going to go out on the internet, so who cares. But when I was at General Synod, we were all summoned to go to York Minster on the Sunday, and it's a very elaborate process, and there's this terribly bossy man who leads the choir who makes you practice singing the chants just right. And it's all very grand, and people wear hats, and you feel it's a bit sort of a set-piece occasion. And General Synod was so stressful, I couldn't bring myself to go. I just wanted to get away and try and listen to God's voice. So I went to the Quaker meeting in York, which was a very simple place, full of very quiet people. And it was the best 3 hours I've had for ages, because I spent the morning looking at York, and then just an hour in Quaker meeting. And what I found there was a kind of prayer which went without words, a prayer that went under words. You got down to a deeper level of relaxation. And there I found the answer to a little problem that had been niggling me for months. Now, I won't trouble you with what the answer to the question was or what the question was. That doesn't matter. But I think what we need to do is to open ourselves to listen in the way that Elijah listened. Now, what's, of course, interesting about Elijah was that he didn't hear God saying what he might have expected. There wasn't the great drama of the thunder, and there wasn't the great kind of rock and roll scenario of the earthquake renting the fabric of the ground beneath his feet. All the things that you might expect a great and mighty God to do, God spoke to him gently, with simplicity, and in almost kind of hard to hear silence. But Elijah knew it was authentic, and it was only in the calm after the storm that Elijah was able to hear. And so we need to find space for quietness which goes beyond sound or fury or words. And that's my prayer for you, really, is that you will continue to enjoy God's presence speaking to you in any way that God speaks to you, through people, through silence, through preaching, and through perhaps occasionally hearing an actual voice, but that you will be blessed by that and that you will be surprised by it. Because sometimes God tells us things that we don't particularly want to hear. I certainly didn't want to hear that God wanted me to give up being an academic and become a vicar. I was very worried about the whole getting rid of my shoes and lipstick thing. It was quite a sticking point for me. But then I began to realise that if God had spoken to me, then eventually it must mean that he wanted what I was rather than what I thought I ought to become. And it was a long process of trying to understand what that heard. But hearing the voice of God sustained me through the sort of difficult things that had to be done on the journey. And so I was surprised by God's voice. And you will be surprised sometimes by what God asks of you. But giving ourselves to what it asks of us is the only joy that we can be sure of in this life. It's the only discipline that is of any significance, is answering God's call in our lives. Now, I do feel like crying, but I just ask God to bless you and to be with you. Amen.